Welcome to the Hot Lava Podcast. Kevin Acey, Padres beat writer for the Union Tribune. Jay Posner, sports editor of the Union Tribune. Jay, I'm covering a team. We are talking about a team that has lost 12 of 20 and 6 of 9. 6 of its past 9. And they played the Nationals. Jay, what do we even talk about today? We're gonna cover Fernando Tatis Jr. We're going to cover the offense. But tell me where you want to start, because, you know, this team.
I was just reviewing the sheet that I quickly scrambled together before our last podcast, which was before the Guardian series. And I had on here that they were 16 and 14 since the All-Star break, and that they were the number of runs they had scored in the wins and the losses. You know, it didn't take very long to update. I didn't have to pull out the abacus to add the number of runs that they've scored in the losses. So 2 losses, 1 run. You know, Cleveland has good pitching. I always liked Cal Quantrill, but still, that is bad. This has been a bad baseball team lately. I don't think there's anybody that would sugarcoat that at this point. Like you said, 6 of 9, 12 of 20, even 16 and 16 since the break, given the teams that they've played, is not good for a team that is supposed to be better.
And was, until this point.
Like,
they were beating teams they should beat. They were even beating some good teams, but not lately. It just doesn't matter. Like, the Royals are coming up. They're whatever they are, 51 and 75. It doesn't matter.
The Royals are terrible. I mean, I looked at some of their numbers, just a couple numbers, because I didn't want to spend that much time on the Royals. They're awful. They have a couple decent pitchers. They have 1 or 2 decent hitters. I mean, they traded one of their best hitters to the Yankees, traded another one to the Blue Jays. So, I mean, they're a bad team. They're not trying to win. And yet, it's hard to go into this series as someone who follows the Padres with any sort of confidence that, like, okay, now this is the time that the Padres are going to break out, because they really haven't shown any signs of it. I mean, the last, what is it? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Those losing 6 of 9, they've scored more than 3 runs once. That's almost impossible to believe. And I know Soto didn't play the last couple games, but still, how is this team this bad? I guess is the question that a lot of people are asking. And I've gotten the question on Twitter. I've gotten the question from people I know. And I don't really have an answer other than I sent you a note yesterday that it either comes down to players are either underperforming or they're being over-evaluated by the front office.
Okay.
I really place the blame on one or the other. And I don't know what the answer is. You know, is Trent Grisham better than this? Should Trent Grisham be better than this? Or is this who Trent Grisham is? I guess you can ask that question about several people. I mean, Austin Nola. I saw Andrés Muñoz yesterday just absolutely blow away Cleveland for the last 4 outs of the game. And it was like, oh, yeah, he pitched here. What the Padres get for him? They got Austin Nola and a couple other people I can't even remember. Austin Adams, I guess, as well, who set a record last year for hit batters. And they also gave up Ty France and Taylor Trammell and Trammell and a couple of other people. So it's like that kind of thing, you know, that's kind of where I start. My gut feeling is this front office did not evaluate a lot of players very well. That's where I would start.
It would be hard to argue with that. And I always hesitate to evaluate trades until, like, I mean, it just, there are waves of when you can evaluate trades. Like, the Indians came to town, and Jay, you're one of the people who gets to talk about Cal Quantrill because you were such a huge Cal Quantrill guy, right? Now, look, we all, as media members and fans, one of the job descriptions we have is the right to not care that we were wrong. Just start spouting in the immediate sense, right? But it sort of drives me crazy when my colleagues, I'm sure I've done it, I try not to do it, fans do it, is, you know, you were all in on a trade and all that, and then a year later, 2 years later, 3 years later, it didn't work out, and the guy who made the trade is a complete buffoon and all that.
Yeah.
That's all right, though, because the guy who made the trade, that's his job. That is his job. That's what he gets evaluated on, is that. And look, relitigating the Mike Clevenger trade, those players may or may not reach their ceiling. They may or may not help the Guardians they are right now. They may or may not help them over the long term. The Mike Clevenger trade, unless the Padres win the World Series this year and Mike Clevenger is, you know, wins some significant games or contributes, that trade was doomed like four starts after he got here, because that trade was to combine him with the Nelson Lamet to make the Padres World Series contenders in 2020. And I will stand by that, that had those guys stayed healthy, then they would have given the Dodgers. They were giving the Dodgers a run during the regular season. They could have slash would have in the division series. Didn't happen. Both those guys' elbows were hurt. The problem with me defending AJ Preller in that manner is you got to do it over and over and over again. Heck, we may end up having to do it with Juan Soto. You know, that guy ended up having a .330 on base percentage. And I'm joking. I don't think that's going to happen. But oh my gosh.
But the Soto trade is one that I think people were in on that. And I'll say, I thought that the Grisham trade was a good trade when it happened. I mean, I'll admit that Grisham looked like he had potential. I wasn't a huge Lauer, you know, giving up Lauer and Luis Urias. It seemed like that was okay. That's a fair enough deal. And Zach Davies was used, you know, he was useful for a while with the Padres. Then he was used to get Yu Darvish, which, you know, certainly was a good trade for the Padres. So, and by no means am I saying every trade is a bad trade. I mean, the Joe Musgrove trade was a very good trade. And the Darvish trade was a very good trade. But I think that's where I come back to the Grisham thing. Is it on Grisham or is it on Preller? And I don't know that there's a correct answer for that. This might be just who Trent Grisham is. And the same thing with the Seattle trade. For the Seattle trade to work, Austin Nola has to be good. Austin Nola is not particularly good. He's not terrible, but he's a guy. And they needed Austin Nola and still need Austin Nola to be more than a guy. And they needed Austin Adams to be every bit as good as Andrés Muñoz. And both of them have had their injury issues. But Adams was healthy last year, and he set a record for hitting guys. Muñoz wasn't. He came back this year, and he looks, at least, again, I'm basing it on one outing, but I think he's pitched pretty well.
And his upside was so immense.
His upside was so big. He was good to watch when he was here. And, yeah, Austin Adams has that great slider, but Muñoz was so good to watch. And, you know, Ty France is another story. I mean, Ty France was phenomenal in the first half this year. I forget the number I sent you yesterday. Ty France is hitting like .129 since this month or something like that. I mean, he has not been good. I still, you know, you still think he's going to be a pretty decent player. Maybe there wasn't a spot for him here. But it's those kind of things, and there's a lot of those kind of trades that you can go way back to. I mean, getting rid of Trey Turner and Max Fried, buying heavy on Will Myers. And Preller has done some really good things, you know, traded for Tatis, traded for Musgrove, traded for Darvish. He got Cronenworth in a deal that, you know, whether Cronenworth was the intended target or not, he was a good result out of those deals. But I just think that the bottom line for why is this team not good or not as good as it should be is it has to be either, to me, and I'm happy to have somebody else come up with a different answer. I just don't think it's Bob Melvin. We've had two different managers we've seen in the last 2 years. One guy seemed like he was in over his head. Everybody said he was in over his head. Bob Melvin is not in over his head. This guy has won hundreds and hundreds of games in the big leagues with teams that looked like they were a lot less talented than this one. So it just seems to come down to either the players are underperforming or they just weren't that good to begin with, and the Padres thought they were better than they are.
Here's some evidence for the fact or for the theory, the idea that there's been some misevaluation. There can be no argument that this team should be better with the payroll it has. So there you go.
Yeah.
Now, two key players I think are underperforming, and I think that the team thinks is underperforming top to bottom, Jake Cronenworth and Trent Grisham. Trent Grisham is better than a .201 hitter or whatever it is right now.
Right.
You might not think he's as good as he was the end of his 19 and then in 20 in the shortened season. Maybe last year, which was injury plagued, and still, I think, you know, he was above average player. You may think that's what he was, but he's not this, all right? There's too much evidence for that. Something has happened where I think Trent Grisham's gone down the wormhole of like, I have this great eye and it paralyzes me. I've talked a lot about that Jake Cronenworth is a contributor in so many ways, but in terms of his numbers, right? Like what you need him to be hasn't been that. So there's two guys that I don't know that there were misevaluations. Now, like the Brewers weren't that high. Now I should say that the powers that be at the Brewers, I talked to people at the Brewers who thought that giving up Trent Grisham was a terrible mistake, but you know, whatever. I think it's both, Jay, as most things are, it's not there. But there is no doubt that some things, and I can't remember if I took this line out of my story yesterday, but regardless, Like, there needs to be some reevaluation internally, and there already has been, and there will be this offseason, about who do you keep and that sort of thing. Because there's some guys that just are not what you thought. Because honestly, this formula that they have of super good players and then some other average players, it's a good formula. It's worked for a lot of teams.
Yeah, but then for one thing is the super good players have to perform. And I would say
that one has to get on the field.
Right. One hasn't been on the field all year. And that does play a part in all this. I mean, the Padres are 68-58, and Tatis has not played a game, nor will he. That's mostly on Tatis, although you could probably make a little bit of an argument that the Padres didn't handle the situation in the offseason all that great. But they haven't had Tatis. Machado's been great. You know, Soto, we talked about last time. He's been good since he's been here, but he hasn't been, oh my God, look how great Juan Soto is. Josh Bell has not been good, with the exception of two games. And geez, where would they be without those two games even, where he hit home runs? But he has not been good. You know, Will Myers hasn't been good this year. Nola hasn't been good this year. Alfaro looks terrible lately. I keep thinking, what's wrong with Luis Camposano? Should he get a shot at this point?
They traded for Cam Gallagher. Luis Camposano's not coming up. Unless something's changed in the last 2 weeks and he is hitting more home runs,
So if that's the case, are they wrong on Camposano? I mean, he's another guy that's supposed to be a great prospect that they didn't trade. Maybe he wasn't in demand as much this time around. I don't, you know, I'm not privy to that.
I never heard his name, which doesn't mean that it wasn't out there, but sure. I didn't hear his name. So, he may be a DH. Maybe he's not a catcher, you know. I think there'll be some reevaluation of that, or there has been some reevaluation of that. And that's just me. I'm not saying that Camposano's moving positions. I'm saying that this current pitching staff, this is not the staff for Luis Camposano.
Right.
And the staff also catches.
Yeah. And this staff could also look different, you know, when going into next year. I mean, there are guys who are, at least two guys who are free agents.
You've got Snell, Darvish, and Musgrove coming back.
Okay. So, yeah, Manaea and Clevenger are free agents. You know, we didn't even mention the Josh Hader trade. You know, you bring in a guy who's been fantastic, had one little dip in around the All-Star break, and then came back and was fine, and then got traded here and wasn't fine again. So that's another story. The Blake Snell trade, you know, I don't know. You could probably play that one either way at this point. I'm not sure. I haven't looked at Luis Patino's stats lately. Patino's also really young. So, of course, what are they going to do about it now, though? That's the question. You know, we've spent 15 minutes talking about the issue, but there's 41 games. There's 41 days left in the season, and there's 36 games, I believe, left in the season. So, what's the answer to get this team across the finish line? Play better.
Well, that's Grisham and Cronenworth. How about Juan Soto, who is a fantastic player. Maybe a little more slug from Juan Soto. Look, it's been 18 games that he's been in the lineup. You know, I mean, this is a guy who's capable of hitting, 15 bombs the rest of the way. Right. Give us 10 here, and that's probably pretty good. Josh Bell hitting better, Brandon Drury hitting better. I think there's signs that Josh Bell is pulled out of that slump, taking the ball the other way a little bit more. And as I went back and looked, that's kind of what he does, right? Play better. It's truly, I really believe like that these guys are caught in it's a bad spot. I don't know. Try to find out today. Did they go blow it out here when they got in late Wednesday night? Okay. Did they go to the zoo yesterday? What did they do something yesterday that they were just like, let's blow this up and start over, because they can't. And there was an incredible Jake Cronenworth quote about going up there and just not being able to stay within your approach in the story that's online now. I think it's still at the top of our page, unless Jeff's pre-series story is up there. But you go up there and you want to see pitches, and so then you let the right one go by. You go up there and you're slumping, so you want to jump on a pitch and you swing at the wrong one, and you're like, I mean, just like me, you guys are like, what? Well, you guys are professionals. They're human. It's a really hard game. and it builds on itself. And you know the guy behind you is stinking right now too. So you yeah. want to be the guy to help your team. So I know that a team that gets shut out four times in whatever it is, 16 games, that is scored, that scored what, 9 runs on the 6-game homestand, that's a team that looks flat. I know that that's a team that's not dancing in the dugout. And so they look bad, right? That's not the case here. I think this team is wound a little bit too tight. Yes. You know, they can't all be Manny Machado, who can go 0-for-14 and be like, whatever, because I'm going to go 3-for-4 with 2 doubles tomorrow. And they can't all be that guy, and they want to, but they can't.
I was just going to say, this was the quote I think you're talking about. You're trying to get a hit on the first pitch because you haven't had one in a while, or trying to see as many pitches as you can and you miss one, you should hit. It's the worst of both worlds. You're trying to inevitably do too much.
Yep.
And I think that probably sums up what a lot of these guys are doing. I think there's more pressure than ever because of what happened last year, that, you know, it's like, oh my God, they can tell you we're not the same team. We're not doing what we did last year. Right now they're doing what they did last year and they know it. I mean, they can say that they're not, but as you said, they're human. They know what's going on. I know it's funny. You say you don't know what they did yesterday, and it'd be interesting to find out. Tom Krasovic and I were talking one day, and he said, this was like over a week ago, he said, Melvin needs to just take these guys bowling one day. And it was like, you know, and I think, you know, whatever it is, whether it's bowling or pickleball or whatever, they needed to do something where they just get out of their heads on. Yeah,
back in the day, it was almost predictable. It was going to be this was before social media and all that. It was going to be at a local restaurant where they just had a $40,000 tab of, you right. know, really good alcohol. And that's not so much what happens anymore, but something like that.
Yeah. So let's hope that maybe that's what happened. You can update us later. We'll change spots here. We'll take a turn and go back, make a U-turn to the off day, or not the off day, but on Tuesday, when Fernando Tatis appeared at Petco Park. He spoke to the team. He spoke to the media. You were there. You spoke to the team. You heard his talk to the media. What's your takeaway on all this?
In that the goal was for it to be series of first steps. I think that between his meeting with AJ Preller, Peter Seidler, the team, what he said publicly, and the fact that in the meeting with AJ Preller, that it was decided he's going to get surgery. That was a goal of the Padres. It was, of course, a goal in the offseason. Now there was a little bit of, you know, leverage to a certain extent. And I think some of the things that Tatis said and that others said, showed that this was very successful. I think for you to have a problem with what Fernando Tatis Jr. said, one, you expected him to come out and say that his original story was bogus. And well, that's on you, because that wasn't going to happen. Right. And two, you were looking for something. I saw people that were disappointed, both in the media and the fans, that were disappointed, like that AJ Preller was sitting next to him. Okay. I don't know what that has to do with anything. I think it was a little odd too, but okay, that it was in the dugout and as opposed to a press conference situation. Yeah, that was a real pain in the butt for us. And I felt it made Tatis feel like a caged animal. But whatever. I thought that the tone and the words were about all that you can ask. And all they were tone and words. The surgery is an action, and what he does going forward is an action. I will say this. Players, listen, other than my mom, if I murdered someone and I was a member of the Padres or any professional sports team, my teammates would be the ones that would have my back and that I would want to be on my jury, because teammates love teammates, and they especially love teammates that can help them win. So those players wanted Tatis to come in and say the things that he said and to forgive him and to move on. There were hugs afterward. The right things were said afterward. This was a positive, positive, positive first step.
Right. It's funny. I took the Preller. I didn't see much of the criticism or any of that kind of stuff. And what I took from Preller sitting there was sort of, this is, we've got your back kind of thing in terms
that's
of
kind of what I took too.
Kind of, I mean, the organization, if that's a bad thing, I don't know. I guess, I mean, and look, if that's the way you feel, great. I mean, you have the right to feel that way. That's just not anything that I took to be as an issue. I didn't even really think about it other than that I thought it was a sign of support by the organization.
There's two things, and take it from someone who's an expert on apologies, who has messed up a lot. The two things that you have to do is, well, there's three, but in the moment, you have to show sincerity and not lash back or blanch at any questions. And Tatis did not. It got a little bit into the minutia a few times about the cream and all this stuff, and there was never anything. And Tatis is an expressive guy, not as expressive as me, for those of you who know me or watch this as opposed to listen, but no eye rolls, no nothing, no change in tone of voice. And I'm sorry, he's 23 years old. He's operating in his second language, which he's very good at, but still, no matter how much he was coached, you can't do that if there's not at least an understanding that you need to come across that way. And look, if that's all there is, if he's all behind the scenes giving us all the bird and saying, I'm getting screwed, whatever, but I don't think he is. I'm just saying that there's an understanding of what he needs to do. And that became very clear. And then the third thing that you need to do is that you need to then follow it up with action. Boom.
Right, right. And I thought that Bryce Miller's column the next day was perfect, because it was like, this was all great, but everything gets judged on what happens next. And that's all you can do. I mean, all any of us can do now is wait and see what happens. I mean,
I can't wait.
If he's on a motorcycle, if he's on an e-bike, riding down Harbor Drive in the off season or something like that, then maybe that's a problem. But all we can do is wait and see what happens.
If I were one-on-one with him, and certainly in the future, given that opportunity, not the first time I talked to him, but if given that opportunity, the one thing is he was asked how he would have handled the off season differently. He said, I wouldn't have gone on a motorcycle. You know what? You should have communicated with the Padres better. Breaking it down. But I will say this, and the reason I wasn't compelled necessarily to follow up on that, and I'm not beating myself up too much, is there were so many other things that he said that he showed in there that he understood that he has not been communicative. He has not followed good advice before. Right. And that is what's most important to the Padres and should be most important to you. I can't wait to see the reaction. Anecdotally, I will say this. I have seen far fewer 23 jerseys in the stands. I don't know. Could that have just been? I don't know. But I have no idea. But anecdotally, I would say far, far fewer.
Maybe they were in the wash and the rotation was for somebody else or something. Yep. I don't know.
Not scientific, but I'm telling you that year, lots of 23s and not
absolutely
homestand.
Yeah. And it's understandable. And it's also interesting come next year.
Yeah, I hope you didn't throw those away, because once he hits five bombs in his first seven games.
Come next spring in Peoria, does it look like there? And then obviously once I just glanced at the schedule, but I think they open at home again.
Yes.
Is it the Rockies and the Diamondbacks?
It's
the Rockies and Giants, maybe.
Yeah, I think it's maybe Rockies, Giants. I don't know.
Whatever it is. Yeah. I know it's against the Rockies, and I know it's at home. And, I mean, look, this team should open at home all the time. I mean, the weather here is pretty good at the end of March, especially compared to some other places. And we'll see what happens when that happens. Now, he won't be there, obviously, opening day, but the fans, can still wear his jersey and that sort of
Hey, if they make if they win the World Series and every series goes, seven or the maximum, he could be back in the middle of April. So just saying.
You didn't just say that. All right. Well, I can't think of anything else. Musgrove pitches tonight.
Darvish Manaea
on Sunday. Sort of the usual start times when they're in the Midwest. 5:10 out here, 4:10 and 11:10 on Sunday. It's an interesting week. I mean, all the games are interesting now. All the games are big now. And then it's on to San Francisco for three. and then over to LA, and then down to LA for three. So
you got it. Not that it matters. We spent the first part talking about that. Not that it matters. Remember when we were on here before the Tigers series and we were borderline making fun of the Tigers because their rankings, not just their record, but their rankings in every metric, bottom of the, well, that's the Royals too. So let's just not talk about it. you've got this team, the Giants are one or two games under 500. And then you go to Dodger Stadium and you got the start of your nine against the Dodgers in September. And so I would say I would say that these next six are kind of big. The Giants, I don't care what anyone says, a division opponent. If they were 10 games under, those would be tough series. They've got some decent pitching. I haven't seen how it lines up. But I would, you know, duh. These are very big ones here at Kauffman Stadium. You lose two or three, and I got to start shifting my coverage even more toward what's going on.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see. I mean, like you said, Royals and Giants both have losing records. The Giants are one game under at 61-62. Then it's L.A., then it's Arizona, and then it's L.A. play again. And a couple with Seattle, which is also playing well. So there are, you know, what, 1-2-3 against the Royals, 7 against the Diamondbacks, 3 against the Rockies that are left, 6 against the Giants. So there's a lot of bad teams that are still on the schedule, other than 9 against the Dodgers, 3 against the Cardinals, you know, 2 against the Mariners kind of thing. So, but right now, the Padres haven't shown that they can really do much against anybody. So tonight would be a good time to turn that around, I would think.
Yeah, I could go into the fact they're facing two lefties, two young guys that aren't doing very well. Probably a bullpen game tomorrow. Zach Greinke was going to pitch tomorrow, went on the injured list, and they called up two relievers. Now, they can obviously make another move that I'm not aware of, but I didn't see any coverage that suggested that they have a starter they're going to call up. So, this is meat. This is red meat. But they've been vegetarians lately. Just made that up. Thanks, everybody.
Have a great weekend.